Welcome to the Rich Room Podcast.
I'm your host, Lindsay Sobel.
Where you can master the art of enriching your life.
What kind of kindergarten shit is this?
And finding a path to financial freedom.
Who the fuck was supposed to teach me how to do my taxes?
So sit back, relax, and step into the Rich Room.
You know I can't help but these, cause they know they can never touch these. So baby, let me talk my shit, or I might just throw another fit.
To the Rich Room Podcast. I'm your host. Okay, I'm not your host. I'm your host, Lindsay Sobel. Y'all, we are not playing around this year. It's important now more than ever that we take care of ourselves and fill our lives up with things that bring us joy and enrich us. And that is the point of this podcast. So, some things that bring me so much joy in this world: morning walking. But if I can romanticize that a bit, I have now been calling it my morning constitutional. I used to think that that meant taking a poo. Sorry for the graphic. But I Googled it the other day, and it actually just means a morning walk. So my morning constitutional brings me so much joy. Meditating. New thing for me, meditating has been bringing me a lot of joy. Espresso. I have myself an espresso every single morning, and it brings me so much joy. It makes me so happy to hold the tiny little cup. I feel like I'm in Europe. I just feel fancy as fuck. And the size is actually preferable. I used to think that I would want I used to drink a large coffee, but now I really prefer just to have, you know, a little bit of espresso, finish it, enjoy it, savor it, and then I'll be on my merry way. And another thing that brings me joy is television. I have always loved TV. I've always felt very comforted by TV. It has unfortunately changed a little bit. I guess that means that I'm evolving. Even though I have an ongoing feud with HBO, I resubscribed to watch White Lotus and Righteous Gemstones. Both are terrific shows that have the perfect amount of comedy and drama. So you would be living under a rock if you did not know that White Lotus has been airing on HBO, because everyone on social media is talking about it. It's set in Thailand. I really want to go to Thailand. The climate seems similar to Miami, which seems similar to New Orleans, so I think I would thrive. It would be very zen, and I could revive my Zen Len era. I guess I'm kind of still in my Zen Len era. Oh, and I'm sure the food is amazing in Thailand. Yeah, I want to go. So the season finale of White Lotus was this Sunday, and there have been mixed reviews on the finale and the show in general. I read online that some people were not happy with the show and they thought it was boring and that it had no plot. I could not disagree more. The season as a whole was fantastic. I do have some notes, but I'm sure Mike White's red wine survivor ass doesn't need my notes. But I'm gonna give them to him anyways. So I have some hot takes from this season of White Lotus that I want to share with you. But first off, if you haven't seen the finale of White Lotus, then pause this episode and go watch it, because I will be spilling the beans and I don't want to ruin it for any of my wonderful, gorgeous, fabulous listeners. So if you continue to listen, you are doing so at your own risk. This is a verbal contract. First, let's talk about Rick and Chelsea. Don't save her. She don't want to be saved. Chelsea, what are you doing? She's like, I promise I can fix him. Y'all, women are so fucking powerful. We are literally healers. And we believe in our healing powers so much that we are willing to risk it all on a man who is really just looking for a mother. That's what most men want in life. They just want to be taken care of as a mother would take care of her child. Mm-mm. So spoiler alert, sweet young 20-something Chelsea gets killed in the crossfire after her emotionally repressed 50-year-old boyfriend mistakenly kills his own father at a wellness resort. So her boyfriend is Rick. Rick is a tortured soul. He was told by his mother on his deathbed that his father was murdered, and she gave him the name of the man who murdered his father. And so Rick decides that he is going to hunt this man down and kill him, or tell him that he ruined his life. And even though Rick's father died before he was born. But you know what? That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter to Rick, because Rick's father's death plagued him from the day he was born. I'm being sarcastic, if that's not coming across. Okay, White Lotus is genius. All of these characters represent something. Like, Rick represents someone who remains a victim of their circumstances. A lot of people are like that. They continue to allow the circumstances they were born into to keep them down, like using it as an excuse for bad behavior. And I think Rick was a representation of that, but he was frustrating as fuck. Sure, he had some childhood trauma, some family issues. Who fucking doesn't? But he had a woman willing to help him and love him. Chelsea's death is a cautionary tale to all women. Do not try to fix him. Do not try to save him. If you stick around with someone who is hell-bent on blaming the world for their problems, you might die. I read a statistic that intimate partner violence is the leading cause of serious injury and death of women from ages 18 to 24. I'm sorry, that is fucking unacceptable. The men need to get it together. I know men are sad in this country and whatever, but men, or maybe not, it's just the whole world. I don't know. Okay, let me rephrase. I know that straight men are supposedly sad for some reason. I don't know, but that's what I hear, that they're sad. But we need to get a hold of this, because men are a grave danger to women, and that is not an over-exaggeration. Obviously, not all men, but if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So those men who are claiming, you know, not all men, then you need to start acting like it. You need to start getting on the side that changes, that makes a change. You need to help. You need to be part of the solution. Okay, let's go to Saxon. So I despised Saxon from the jump. His name might as well be Chad. Like, from the Sperry boat shoes, to the vineyard vine belt, to the polo shirt, to the Costas with the croaky. I'd say Saxon represented the douches of the world. He was hyper-sexualized, but really lacked depth. Things changed under the full moon when he went all Menendez with his people-pleasing brother Lachlan. The actor, his name's Patrick Schwarzenegger, who played Saxon, did a very good job. We saw Saxon go from overconfident wannabe alpha to having his entire identity destroyed. I think that was a major point of this season, that we are prisoners of our own identity prison that we built for ourselves, and we don't really realize it. Well, after Saxon had his world shattered, he started looking inward. And at the end of the show, he was reading books by Buddhist monks and exploring his spiritual side. It was beautiful. And even though Chelsea died, her legacy lived on. She gave Saxon the books that he was reading. And even though they only met for 1 week at a luxury wellness hotel and spa in freaking Thailand, where Chelsea was murdered, she profoundly impacted Saxon's life. It reinforces the idea that quality human interactions are more important and more profound than the quantity or the frequency of these interactions. There are people that I've only met once and probably will not meet ever again who have had profound impacts on my life and whom I still think about today. Okay, let's go to Piper. I was really rooting for Piper, and I was quite disappointed that she, at the end of the season, expressed dissatisfaction with the accommodations and the food at the Buddhist monastery. Bitch, what did you expect? And there's no way that the food is bad. It's Thailand. Thai food is delicious and flavorful. And all you need is a little hot sauce, preferably crystals. And if that won't do, get some sriracha. Get some soy sauce. It's only for a year. You can make it work. I was very disappointed by Piper. And when she told her mom and dad that she was not pleased with the food and the living quarters, I was just thinking, like, Piper, no! Tsunami! Buddhism! Man, Parker Posey was fantastic in this show as Victoria Ratliff. That smug face that she made when she was right that her daughter didn't want to live at a monastery is an expression that all mothers know. But Piper was disappointing. And I think she represented the typical eat, pray, love bitch who talks the talk but doesn't walk the walk. Even if the food and accommodations are bad, it's just for 1 year. Can you imagine all the bad habits that you would break and all the wisdom you would learn from just being there only 1 year? Oh, and I was very happy to see some consistent male full frontal nudity. I mean, not that I'm out here like looking for dicks, but historically, only women's reproductive organs have been hypersexualized in mainstream media. Mike White said that ends now. Jason Isaacs, who plays Timothy Ratliff and also plays Lucius Malfoy in Harry Potter, showed his dick. Patrick Schwarzenegger showed his dick. Wait, did Rick show his dick? I feel like he did, but I also feel like I've seen... Oh my God, he did. It was in Righteous Gemstones. Okay, Walton Goggins, who plays Rick, also plays Billy Baby on Righteous Gemstones. And he did a scene this season where he water skis completely butt-ass naked. And there is a very long shot on him on his front side and on his back side. Walton Goggins deserves an Emmy for his performance in White Lotus. He did fucking fantastic. Okay, the three friend group. The three friend group resonated with a lot of women. So throughout the season, so there was these three friends, okay? They were like best friends in high school, and I guess they were in their like early 40s, still trying to cling on to being youthful. And I guess they've kept up over the years, but they're going on this trip together and they're like so excited. But when the season started, there's three of them. And when one of the friends would walk away from the table or go to the bathroom or something or just not be in their presence anymore, the other two would talk a bunch of shit about the one that isn't there. But like in a like a really passive aggressive way, it's like, but like they're always ending with, but I love her. Oh my God, I love her so much. Yes. No. But I love her. It got like, I was like, this is terrible. These people aren't friends. And then there was like this competition among them to be the prettiest or the thinnest or the youngest looking. And then they compete for a hot Russian man named Valentin. And then one bitch, she's married, she pushes him on her other friend, and the other friend doesn't hook up with him, and then the married bitch ends up hooking up with him, even though she's married. It's like, what? That causes some major tension and brings up decades-old unresolved issues in the group. Like, these bitches are only at this resort for 1 week. And the majority of the time, they are talking shit about each other and then playing these weird-ass games vying for the attention of spiritual healer turned co-conspirator to robbery, Valentin. So, they are at the final dinner, and the two of the girls are like, oh, I've been so happy this week. Like, I love you. Like, this has been the best week. And these two bitches are really laying it on thick. And then the other friend, who they didn't even know if she was going to make it to the fucking dinner, who just walks up, she's like, you know what? I've been really sad. And I'm just happy to be at his table. And my old belief systems of my job, of being married, of being a mom, they didn't work. But you know what? That's okay. That's not what gives my life meaning. Time does. And listen, I'm obviously not doing the monologue like Ver fucking Batum, but you get the gist. And if you saw the episode, you saw it was a pretty powerful monologue. And I was like, yes, bitch, let's go. Because I thought after that, she was, when she concluded that portion of the monologue, that she was going to rip these hoes a new one. But then, in a confusing turn for me, she starts talking like, but we've been through life together and we're going through life together. And it's so meaningful when we're just hanging around the pool. And the other two are like, yes, yes, it is. I love you. And she's like, I love you. And I was just like, I am so confused. I'm entirely confused. I mean, maybe that's the point. Maybe we were supposed to be confused. Maybe part of the audience was going to feel one way and part of the audience was going to feel another way. I don't know. Okay, I was confused because these women weren't supporting each other. Yes, they loved each other, but they were harshly judging each other and talking shit behind each other's back consistently. This is not what I would call friendship. I was confused when I watched it, okay? But I, in a rare turn of events, I stayed up to watch it. It started at 9 and it ended at 10:30. And I almost fell asleep, but I stayed awake to watch it because I wanted to, I don't know, I feel like it's fun to watch it with the rest of the country watching it, but I'm on East Coast time, so it comes on at 9 p.m., which is my bedtime. But I stayed up. I stayed up to watch it. And I was so confused. Okay, so the next day, I was like, you know what? Maybe I was just confused. Maybe I didn't get it. Maybe I need to watch it again because I saw everyone on social media praising it. And I watched it again the next day. And I was still confused. So I went back to social media and I started reading all the articles that I was seeing being posted, you know, article after article, post after post, saying how this show showed how complex and beautiful female friendships are. And I'm like, heh. I almost feel that the people who are saying that this is a representation of female friendships have told on themselves that this is how they treat their friends or how they're accepting of this treatment. I mean, shit, with friends like those, who needs enemies? I don't know. Maybe I'm off base. I was supposed to discuss this specific issue with my therapist in the session this week, but she had not seen the finale yet, so I had to put a pin in it and we'll discuss it in a few weeks. And I'll let y'all know what she says. I really appreciated the Mook and Gatok storyline. I saw on Reddit that someone thought that the Mook and Gatok storyline was boring, but I didn't feel that way. I feel like Gatok represented someone who has like self-limiting beliefs and that Mook represented women's high expectations of men. Like Gatok was nonviolent. He, the whole time, that was his thing. He's like, I don't want to be a security guard. I'm nonviolent. I'm a Buddhist. And he was nonviolent until he was presented with a situation where he had to defend someone else in a life or death situation. And he handled business. I think showing to himself that there are situations in life that you do have to exhibit some violence, some form of violence in order of the defense of yourself and the defense of others. And for Mook, she was only interested in Gatok if he had more ambition of being like a security guard than working the front security gate at the White Lotus. And I feel like, and like the whole time when she was like she wasn't saying she wasn't gonna date him if he didn't have more ambition, but she was saying it without saying it. It was like in so many words, like the subtext of what she was saying. And I felt like, and my reaction was, oh, Mook, this is a good guy. You need to, like, who cares if he wants to be nonviolent? But she has a point in the sense that, like, okay, and I feel that way too, right? You don't want violence, but if you are in a family and you are in a partnership in any kind of way and someone attacks, which people do attack, this is fucking life, right? You got to be able to defend yourself, and you don't want to be with someone who's like, I'm not violent. Sorry, I'm not violent. Yeah, you got to be violent sometimes. I mean, do as the least amount of harm that is possible, but it's true. So even though Mook's expectations were high, it was like she was showing Gatok something that he didn't know about himself, which is also probably a common theme in a lot of relationships right now. But all in all, I thought White Lotus season 3 was amazing. I would have liked to seen like a flashback scene with Tanya in it, because I really wanted Jennifer Coolidge to be in this season because I just fucking adore her. And I think they really missed an opportunity there, but whatever. It still was a fantastic show. If you disagree or agree or want to discuss any of the things about White Lotus, DM me on Instagram at the Rich Room Podcast. But now let's turn to a topic that is affecting the entire globe, U.S. politics. You know, I didn't know that our stock market affected markets around the globe. I mean, that's probably naive of me, but I didn't know that. And I wasn't even going to talk about this today, but in this administration, things change by the hour. I'm sorry, y'all. Actually, I'm not sorry. This guy is a terrible leader. In no way has he united the country in a stressful time. He doesn't ease the fears and concerns of the majority of the citizens. And now he might have openly committed insider trading, and you cannot make this shit up. Ooh, god dang it, I wish I didn't feel the need to talk about this shit. It's super depressing to see the fall of our country in this way. I mean, democracy is like going out the window. We are in full-blown dictatorship tyranny land. We might as well bring Putin on over and revive Hitler and Castro from the dead. Oh, and we can't forget Kim Jong-un. That's the energy that this administration is bringing. Throw in Stalin and Mussolini and we got a fucking fascist party. Americans do not like what's going on right now. Many people who voted for Trump are now expressing regret for that choice. And I get it. Trump is doing what he said he was going to do while simultaneously doing exactly the opposite of what he said he was going to do. It's honestly impressive in a twisted way. Let's start with the hands-off protest. I read a report that collectively 1 million people in all 50 states on April 5th protested the Trump administration's recent policy changes and Elon Musk's involvement in U.S. governments. I think this is great. I think protesting is great, but I did not attend. I have hypermobile joints and I am prone to injury. I'm also recovering from a dislocated shoulder. But I protest in different ways. I give money. I use my voice. I participate in boycotts. And maybe there will come a time for in-person protests, but it ain't now. I fit multiple lifetimes in my 36 years, and I am tired. But fear not, I'll do my part. Now let's get into my new favorite excuse to not leave the house. Girl, I cannot come out tonight. And my friend is like, why? And I'm like, the tariffs, girl. What are tariffs? It's a charge on foreign nations for goods sold in the U.S. Why is this an issue? Well, the U.S. doesn't really manufacture much. And I'm not going to get into all the ways this is a stupid idea. Anyone with a basic understanding of economics knows that this shit is going to tank the economy. All the experts condemn this move. It was so ironic, too, because Trump has been talking about tariffs on Canada and Mexico, and the tariffs were not levied on either Canada or Mexico. The tariffs were levied on many nations, though, including an island not inhabited by any humans, but only by penguins and seals. I'm not making this up. This has been fact-checked and confirmed. When questioned about this, the Trump administration said that the island was included so that other nations don't try and ship through the island. But to me, it seems reckless and hasty. Now, Trump could have gone a more prudent route and met with all of these nations to renegotiate reciprocal tariffs, but then he wouldn't have been able to tank the U.S. stock market and then tell all of his people on his social media network, Truth Social, to buy stock before he put a pause on the tariffs for 90 days with every nation except China. The tariffs and Dorinda Medley are both put on pause. Now, the U.S. and China are in a tariff rap battle on who can drop more sick tariff beads. Girl, I am tired. This all happened within like the last 5 days. What chaos this is creating. And if Alan Cummings taught us anything, it's that it's a traitor's job to create chaos and confusion. Honestly, I could see Trump on season 4 of The Traitors. It's very on brand. So the U.S. stock market has been tanking since Liberation Day on April 2nd when Trump announced tariffs on foreign nations, after which the stock market began to plummet significantly. Many people, including myself, questioned this move by Trump because historically, tariffs have never worked. And the last time we tried, we ended up in the Great Depression. It felt like Trump was tanking the stock market intentionally, because why else would you impose foreign policy that experts who affiliate with both parties say is a horrible idea and doesn't work? You know, those stupid experts, they just don't see that Trump vision. See, Trump, like most mega wealthy people, like when the economy is down, because they aren't affected by the economic downturn and it gives them the unique opportunity to purchase things. And boy, is their money in misery. So it started to feel like Trump was intentionally tanking the stock market. And who benefits from a down market? Wealthy people. On April 9th at 9:37 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Trump posted on Truth Social, quote, "This is a great time to buy," end quote. Hours later, he paused the 90-day tariffs on all nations except China, which then revived the stock market. So, if you took old Sports Insider tip and purchased stock cheap before Trump paused the tariffs, well then, damn it, you made yourself some money. Congratulations. Small little problem. This little insider tip is tantamount to insider trading. I went and read the insider trading statute in preparation for this episode, and the language is broad. So I feel like this might have been a little bit of a short-sighted move. We will just have to see how this plays out. Now, the first thing that came to mind is that Trump has immunity. That was a big ruling by the conservative stacked Supreme Court last year. So I went and read the ruling to prepare for today. And he doesn't have complete, absolute immunity like I was thinking. He has absolute immunity from criminal prosecution for official acts based on the core presidential powers granted in the Constitution. That's one. And then, number two, he has presumptive immunity, meaning that the immunity can be challenged for official acts that are not based on the core powers enumerated in the U.S. Constitution, which is so fucking dumb because if you are, so I guess that's, ugh, I'm not going to get into constitutional law with y'all. It would be pointless. And then third, he has no immunity from criminal prosecutions for unofficial acts. So I guess whenever you're determining where the immunity lies, you have to first determine what kind of act he is doing. And I don't know what you think. What do you guys think? Do you think that posting on social media saying now is a time to buy, now is a good time to buy, is an official presidential act? Is that acting in his capacity? I don't know. I can see arguments for both sides, but we'll just have to see. There really are arguments for all three forms of immunity at this point. The Supreme Court has given Trump quite a lot of power, which is scary. and I think short-sighted, but here we are. But old sport really needed more power, didn't he? So this week, the House of Representatives passed the No Rogue Rulings Act, which would limit the power of lower federal court judges to issue orders with national implications in response to rulings to halt Trump's administration's agenda. No Rogue Rulings Act, okay? I don't think rulings are made in a rogue manner. They're not, judges don't make rulings to go against the grain. Judges make rulings to follow the law. Political experts are saying that the bill will not pass the Senate, but I'm not confident of anything right now. So they're saying that in order to pass the Senate, they'll need to get some of the Democrats to vote for this. And I fucking hope Chuck Schumer, you better fucking vote against this. Is Chuck Schumer in the Senate? I think he is. I hope that he better have voted against this. I'm going to go check after this. For all my non-lawyers, this bill is tyranny. This bill allows the presidential power to go unchecked. This goes against everything a free nation stands for. This bill is an extreme deviation from the checks and balances our country has benefited from and enjoyed since the inception of this nation. Wow, I mean, it is wild and dare I say unethical that there are attorneys who are in Congress and voting against this bill. I say unethical as it relates to the rules of professional conduct that all attorneys must abide by. Girl, I bet the American Bar Association is tired of making statements, honey. They are probably out back by the dumpster right now smoking cigarettes, hoping no one fucking finds them. Like, they've gone off the grid. They're probably, like, moving to the woods. Like, I feel bad for them. I really do. It's crazy. It's crazy. And it's wild because there are so many things that people should be pissed about but aren't. Like leaking military plans via Signal chat and accidentally including a like journalist in a Signal text about battle plans for Yemen. And I heard that same senator or whoever, congressperson or whatever the fuck he is, I think he's actually a reality TV star, but that tracks, right? That's the era we're in. He also, I read, brought his wife to classified meetings. So it's like, I don't want to hear a motherfucking thing ever again about Hillary Clinton's emails, okay? I don't want to hear a thing because y'all are breaching national security and no one's saying a damn thing about it. I mean, there are people saying things about it, but not the people who were saying shit about Hillary Clinton's emails. Those people aren't saying shit. That's what I mean. I also, like, it's crazy that we have a leader who is like making it part of his agenda to retaliate against people who disagree with him. That's wild. Why aren't we allowed to disagree with the president? This is not fucking communism here. I know you think it is, but it's not. Ooh, another thing that people aren't really talking all that much about, FEMA being dismantled. That's going to be real fun this hurricane season. Good luck to you all. Good luck to me. It's also so ironic that we have a Department of Efficiency now, or I think that's what it's called. But it's crazy to me that we have a Department of Efficiency, but there has been so many inefficiency and so much recklessness going on. That is such a major issue. This administration is taking hasty action, and they've like deported people who are legally allowed to live in the U.S., by mistake. They admitted it was a mistake. There was one man from Maryland who was wrongfully deported to a jail in El Salvador where every man's head was shaved and they were like all in chained together and everything. This it's Nazi era shit and people are staying silent and it's disappointing. Like, why aren't we checking to make sure that the people you're deporting are actually not allowed to be here? Because it's not about legal and illegal. It's about power and control. Because if it was about being correct, if it was about being legal, you would be checking to make sure that these people who you're deporting are actually need to be deported. And I don't think that's the only instance. I think there are multiple instances of people living in the U.S. legally who are being deported. So it's not about being legal or illegal. And I think people should be calling this shit out. there are also things that people are mad about, but then stay silent on other issues. For one, Teslas. This administration and Tesla vandal victims have been very vocal about Teslas being vandalized and damaged. I understand that it is very upsetting to have your car damaged simply because of the brand. And I don't think it's right to damage people's cars in protests. I disagree with it. And I believe there is a better way to go about it. My issue is that there is so much outrage for damaged property, but not equal outrage when harm is unquestionably done to people. Like Pam Bondi, ugh, God. Like Pam Bondi wants to give the death penalty to people who are damaging Teslas. Like, where is your pro-life stance? What an insane statement to make. Like, just like the protests against police brutality, people were outraged about the damage done to property and businesses, but no one said a damn thing when some sporting team wins a championship and the fans tear up the city, destroying cars, destroying businesses, destroying property. No one says anything. The real problem is that some people are allowed to do stuff, but other peoples aren't allowed to do stuff, and it's bullshit. Like, we look down, like our citizens, we look down on our citizens who get government assistance, but our corporations are allowed and do every single year to have government subsidies, aka corporate welfare. And we're okay with that. No one says a fucking word about that. So it's okay for corporations to get money from the government, but it's not okay for citizens to get money from the government. The government is not made for corporations. The government is made for citizens. You have an ass backwards. So yeah, people are mad. And I wish more people would speak out, but I get it. And I mean, you don't have to speak out. And when I say speak out, I don't mean you have to make a social media post, but like, speak out to your loved ones. Have debates. Get curious where people are coming from. Try to find some common ground. I think it's the only way. I truly do. Well, we are not going to end this episode with politics because I refuse to let politics dysregulate me. And that is something that I have struggled with ever since I started informing myself of politics when I turned 18 and voted for the first time in 2008. Politics fucking dysregulate me. My nervous system gets dysregulated. My emotions are all over the place. I have tried staying out of politics for my mental health. I tried real hard. I tried being blissfully ignorant, but I couldn't shake the feeling that there were injustices being done to people that I care about and to just people in general, and that I felt compelled to stand up for them. Because very few people stood up for me. When I had my daughter, very few people stood up for me and the way I was treated. Quite the opposite, in fact. And what was my crime as a 16-year-old? That I had sex? Please raise your hand if you had sex as a teenager before getting married. Are you raising your hand? You're raising your hand, aren't you? So I know how it fucking feels. Or to have some fraction of the feeling that people feel when you're being treated differently, even though you're doing the exact same thing as everyone else. Because it hurts, and it's not fair, and it's not right, and it's hypocritical as fuck. I think that's why I can't be blissfully ignorant and I can't stay out of politics. I think we really all should ask ourselves, at what point will I speak out? What will be the tipping point? Which line will this administration cross that will actually make you stand up and say this is wrong? The harsh reality is that the point where you start caring, it might be too late. So we have to care now, which is why I've had to learn how to regulate my emotions and my nervous system. So to regulate my nervous system, I did a 30-day somatic exercise program by The Workout Witch. You can find her on Instagram. She's well known. I've also been meditating, which has been very helpful. Honestly, I'm going to give myself major fucking kudos because when 3 years ago, I was living in an Airbnb in New Orleans and had no idea how my life was going to go. And I knew that people found great benefits from meditating. And I tried really hard, but I couldn't get it. And I've tried meditating ever since. But recently, I got a meditation app that was recommended to me by my friend Issa. It's called Open, and I have been doing it consistently, and it has been fucking helping. Like, it has really been helping. Probably more importantly, though, I have been learning how to separate myself from my emotions and thoughts. Like, we are not our thoughts and feelings. We are souls. We are beings wrapped in a human bag of bones. We are just walking around wearing meat sacks. Our thoughts and our feelings come into our consciousness, but we have the power to observe our thoughts and feelings from afar, like clouds passing by. And we can be like, okay, I recognize that I am sad, but I'm going to remind myself that I am not my grief and sadness, and that I can observe this feeling and identify it without actually letting the thought or feeling overtake me. That technique that I am learning has been very, 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 very helpful to me. Because when we are dysregulated emotionally, it's like looking at your reflection in a pot of boiling water. You can't see yourself. And when you can't see yourself, you run the high risk of making choices that you might regret later. But when you're cool and regulated, the water isn't boiling. You can see yourself clearly. The waters are calm, and you can make decisions from a calm state of mind. All right, I'm going to talk more about this in the future episodes, but I just wanted to give you a little something to take with you to maybe just try on your own. It is extremely liberating to know that you have a choice in your thoughts and feelings, that you're an active participant in that experience, and that you don't have to take on those emotions and those thoughts. And another thing that I'm realizing now, that I'm starting to learn now, is to recognize when you're dysregulated so that you can use the tools that you're learning to pull yourself out of it and get into a regulated space. And especially in this climate, the climate that we're in right now, this is fucking war, y'all. This is wartime, and it's crazy. And being politically involved in this climate is not for the weak-minded. Thank you for joining me today. I feel like I'm getting back into the swing of things. I have a lot of exciting stuff coming up this year, and I'm so excited to share everything I've learned with y'all. So follow the Rich Room Podcast on Instagram, and you can also follow me on my personal account. I have a new Insta handle, @lovewithlindsay. I'm just trying that on. I don't know if it's going to work, but you can still find me under my name, Lindsay Sobel. Have a fantastic weekend, everybody. Oh, everyone manifest on Saturday for the new moon in Libra. Things are happening. Ta-ta.